From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump, late last Friday, commuted the sentence of his longtime friend and colleague, Roger Stone, who was about to start a 40-month prison sentence for conviction over lying to federal officials. No sooner did the commutation spark accusations of political corruption when Stone announced he would begin campaigning for Trump's re-election. Stone said, "I will do anything necessary to elect my candidate short of breaking the law." In response to the commutation, former special counsel Robert Mueller broke his lengthy silence by writing an op-ed in the Washington Post. In it, he said, he felt compelled to respond and that, quote, Stone was prosecuted and convicted because he committed federal crimes. He remains a convicted felon, and rightly so. Some have pointed out that because Trump didn't pardon Stone, he can be tried again by a future Justice Department or be made to face a grand jury. Others, like my guest, say Trump's commutation might be unconstitutional. Corey Brettschneider is a professor of political science at Brown University. He's the author of When the State Speaks, What Should It Say? How Can Democracies Protect Expression and Promote Equality? Also, he is the author of The Oath in the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents. His latest article in The Atlantic is called The Traditional Interpretation of the Pardon Power is Wrong. He's been a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Corey.
Thanks so much, Sonali, and great to talk to you.
So what is the difference between a pardon and a commutation of a sentence? Trump commuted Stone's sentence. He did not pardon him.
Yes, a pardon can come in a variety of different forms. Usually we talk about a full pardon, which means that basically the person is forgiven. Commutation is about a reduced sentence, in this case, a forgiveness of the time remaining that he would have. And he would just be free, but it wouldn't wipe away the conviction. So as Robert Mueller put it in his recent Washington Post piece, Roger Stone remains a convicted felon and will after the commutation. Now, why he said that he requested the commutation, and my understanding from listening to the president, because he wants to have a chance to really appeal and win his case. And he thinks that the commutation both gets him out of prison and then he'll have the best of both worlds, that he can still claim total innocence and doesn't have to seek forgiveness. He can claim that he was exonerated. So I think that's what's going on.
Some have also suggested, I can't remember exactly where I read it, but that Trump, in choosing commutation, basically did the minimum to get Stone out of prison. And that's sort of typical for Trump, because by refusing to outright pardon him, Trump still holds, you know, something over Roger Stone. He can manipulate Roger Stone. Roger Stone is at his, you know, beck and call, and already has said he's going to campaign for him. It sort of seems in line with Trump's approach to how he demands loyalty from his, you know, henchmen, if you will, to choose commutation over a pardon. But I guess we may never know the truth.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. He doesn't retain that much control because he is out of prison, and there's no real threat, for instance, that he could just return him to prison by revoking the commutation. I think once it's granted, it's granted. The idea, yes, that he holds something over him still, which is the ability to forgive the charges.
Or that Roger Stone may have some, you know, dirt on Trump.
As you'll see, as we'll discuss, and as I'm sure you know, when we talk about the piece, this is not a normal pardon. It is really the pardon of a co-conspirator. These two, for years going back, have all sorts of dealings with one another. And in fact, the entire reason why Stone was in prison was to serve the interests of Donald Trump. And the thought was from the beginning, too, that in return, this is what we know from his own words, David Frum in The Atlantic had a great reporting on it, is that basically, you know, I'll help you. I won't give Congress the information that they need to take you down, including an impeachment. And in return, you pardon me or you commute my sentence. And that's exactly what's happened. It is a pardon and agreement among co-conspirators, exactly at the time that, that we worried about.
So he was shown to have lied about the meetings between Trump and WikiLeaks and Russian operatives and all of those connections. How solid was his conviction? I understand that there was something like five counts and that it was, although it was a secret grand jury, it was a unanimous conviction?
When you see the tapes of him talking to investigators or talking to prosecutors, and you can imagine what went on in these congressional inquiries, he's so brazen in the lying and the obstruction, you know, really cursing almost at investigators, that I don't think there was a lot of doubt here that he was trying to obstruct and perjured himself continually in trying to evade Congress. You know, this is somebody who, like his mentor, Roy Cohn, doesn't seem to believe in democratic government. He believes in government of him and his friends and his cronies. So the idea of respecting a congressional inquiry, even though the ability of Congress to investigate the president and possibly remove him or her, is one of the most important things that we have in our republic. It's what guarantees democracy. If you're somebody who doesn't respect that form of government, which I don't believe that Stone does in any serious way, what do you care? And that's how he's acted. And it is a threat to democracy.
So let's talk about specifically what you address in your article in The Atlantic with Jeffrey K. Tullis, which is that because Stone's charges and conviction were related to what Donald Trump was eventually impeached for, and I'd like you to parse that, because some would argue that the Russia probe was, of course, separate from the Ukraine story, that the commutation was unconstitutional.
Yeah, we say that the connection between the impeachment and the pardon was about the investigation, that the investigation was into Ukraine in part, but also, of course, the reason why Stone was there in the first place and committed the crime, the investigation was into his wrongdoing as well in regard to the Russia investigation. Now, the fact that the charges, they do reference Russia, that's a common mistake think that they don't.
Are you talking about the articles of impeachment do reference Russia?
The articles of impeachment, sorry, yes, twice mentioned in both articles, the broader concern that the president isn't just in this one instance engaging in solicitation of a foreign government and isn't just obstructing Congress, but that he's been doing it repeatedly. And there's a reference in both instances, of course, to the Russian investigation. So our point is, if the investigation was about this, and the only reason why we don't have more about Mueller's report, we don't have more about Russia, is because of the obstruction. He can't benefit from that. He's the reason why you don't see more language in the articles of impeachment. But the scope is certainly broad. And a further point is that inquiry hasn't gone away. That, you know, repeatedly the Congress and documents, I believe in the subpoena cases, for instance, references the fact that this is ongoing. It's not that they've given up entirely or did give up entirely on the Russian investigation. They just didn't bring it forth. I think largely for political reasons, they focused on Ukraine. But certainly the scope of the investigation included it. It included consideration of them. And we shouldn't reward Stone. It would be a terrible principle to allow Stone to be rewarded for successfully undermining the investigation by saying that that had nothing to do with impeachment, because the impeachment focused on Ukraine.
So why is it that it could be unconstitutional for pardons and reprieves and commutations linked to impeachment? You know, traditionally presidents have issued pardons and commutations for all sorts of people convicted of all sorts of things. But when it's linked to a president's impeachment, it's specifically unconstitutional?
That's our argument. And we start with the text itself. And if you look there, if you've never read the text before, it talks about one exception to the pardon power. The president has the power to issue pardons or reprieves. There's a comma after that clause granting the power. And by the way, commutation comes from that pardons and reprieves power. And there's a comma and it says, except in cases of impeachment. Now, what does that mean? The usual traditional view is, that just means that a president can't stop an impeachment from happening. and that he can't forgive the punishments that come from an impeachment, like conviction or disqualification from office. And what we do in the piece very carefully is say, even though every lawyer is taught this, you know, that's the meaning of the clause, it's kind of a dead clause, we look at the history. And it turns out there's not really great evidence for that. When the Constitutional Convention drafted that language, we don't have any lectures or notes signifying that. And in fact, there's evidence that suggests the opposite, because the language that would have been used to really signify the idea that this is just about stopping or undoing an impeachment, the reference to what's called the law of settlement, is actually voted down. And it's voted down after the language that supposedly includes it. So that's a puzzle, what happened that day, even though people have claimed for so long that, of course, it was about this parliamentary process of ensuring that the king didn't interfere with an impeachment. And what we show by really looking in depth is that evidence isn't there. It comes much later from a jurist called Joseph Story, who says probably what this thing means is that it's like Parliament, that you can't stop an impeachment. It's like not being able to stop the king not being able to stop an impeachment. And they changed just a little bit because the king was able to pardon the results of an impeachment, the penalties of an impeachment, but we won't allow the president to do that. Now, where did Joseph Story get that from? He says that's probably what happens. And over time, it's like a game of telephone. We've reduced that power so that it's meaningless when it comes to stopping presidential pardons, really. And based on what? Based on nothing, based on speculation. And so when you really think about the power, we say, let's start again. Let's retell the story. It turns out James Madison thought that you couldn't pardon a co-conspirator. The framers were deeply concerned about this problem. They worried about a president who would team up with criminals and use that partnership to undermine the rule of law. And it was such a severe disagreement that at the Virginia Ratifying Convention, Mr. Mason said to Mr. Madison, hey, this thing stinks. It's gonna allow presidents to pardon their friends and to become criminals. And Madison basically said, no, that wouldn't happen. There's a way, basically, upon impeachment, of stripping a president of his powers, and specifically mentioned the pardon power. Now, Madison had a whole apparatus, a theory about suspending presidents before they were convicted in the House of Representatives. But we say, look, his basic point is he can't do it. And when you think about the Constitution as a whole, that shouldn't be a surprise, because the Constitution is all about making presidents accountable to the rule of law. And that's what we're trying to restore. And this pardon of Stone is the opposite of that. It's undermining the rule of law, using the office to really crush the main democratic check that we have in our system, and that's impeachment. The impeachment power is so important because it's the way that people stop a criminal president. And if we allow a criminal president to just pardon his way out of the check, then we've cut off the main mechanism that we as citizens have.
So can you apply any of this to the Nixon case, and whether Nixon tried to use his power of the pardon to pardon his way out of impeachment? Of course, in the end, he resigned before the Senate tried him.
Yeah, we don't make that case in this article, but I certainly think there's an interesting connection. And the great journalist I.F. Stone around that time made a very similar argument to what you just said. He said, look, you know, lawyers think that they know what this thing means, except in cases of impeachment. And he said, what's the principle here? It's about democracy, about the rule of law. And this Ford pardon of Nixon is really undermining that, and we shouldn't allow it. I'm tempted by that argument, yes, very much. And it relates importantly to what we're saying in our piece.
Is your view something that can be acted upon by our system? I mean, we're supposed to have a system of checks and balances. The past 4 years have unfortunately shown that our constitutional system, our system of government, is not as robust or immune to a president like Donald Trump than what we might have thought. We also see a lot of members of Congress who have that power of impeachment playing politics and weighing strategically whether impeachment is good for their party or good for the country or good for re-election or not, instead of actually adhering to the Constitution.
Look, I think, you know, you really said it so well. Of course, you know, Congress has to play a more robust role. One thing they should be doing right now is seeking the judge, Jackson, who is supposed to approve the commutation. They should be there today saying, you can't do that. We have standing before this court in order to argue that this commutation is unconstitutional. And the House needs to do that. Now, are they going to do that? I haven't seen action in that direction. Partly it's a result of the fact that we've forgotten the meaning of the pardon power, that we've had this false picture in our head, not realizing that it really is about the rule of law. So that's what we're trying to do in the piece, is to get people to understand that. So maybe in the Flynn case, for instance, if that results in a pardon, that is a place where there's a very clear way to challenge, because in that case, the judge has appointed an alternative person to the Department of Justice to basically represent the interests of justice and the law. And that judge, that retired judge who has that now prosecutorial role, should make this argument, and could.
How deeply complicit in what we're seeing around these cases and what Trump has done, how deeply complicit is Attorney General William Barr?
Terribly. He said, if you look, I was just looking at this video in his confirmation hearing, he was asked about this. Like, well, would you think that a pardon of somebody who conspired with the president was valid? And he said, no, that would be a crime. He both said it would be a crime, but he also said it would be an invalid pardon, exactly the kind of thing that we're saying. And yet I haven't heard him speaking out against this commutation. I know that he's behind closed doors, possibly been saying things. And part of it, you know, I think when it comes down to it, is he might have said that to Congress, but his view of executive power is so frightening. William Barr's view is basically that the president is like an absolute monarch. And really anybody who studied the Constitution, any school child who's looked at it at all, I mean, you don't need to be a B student, you could be a D student and know. We were rebelling from absolute monarchy. We wanted a limited system. Even the British had a system in which the king was limited by parliament and to some degree the law. And the American Constitution wasn't about going back to some absolute theory of monarchy. The framers, in many ways, of course, were terrible people. And slavery is a stain and sin on this nation. But they did understand that there was a danger of an absolute monarch. And that part of the Constitution we've got to bring back.
So much for the law and order presidency, right? That's the other aspect of this. Trump and his party as a whole have tried to paint themselves as being, you know, for law and order. But when it comes to their own friends, they throw that out the window, because then it's all a political witch hunt. And that's, of course, the justification being given for Stone's commutation, for the case against Michael Flynn being dropped, and, you know, for basically them now going after anybody internally who was involved in the impeachment. We saw Alexander Vindman, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, basically being bullied into retiring. His lawyer used the word campaign of intimidation and bullying against Vindman, causing him to, you know, announce early retirement. And now we've heard Senator Lindsey Graham saying that he wants to bring Robert Mueller up for a Senate hearing, because if Mueller can break his silence by writing an op-ed in the Washington Post, then certainly he can speak to Congress about the so-called Russia witch hunt. So it's really interesting to see that the hypocrisy by the Republican Party.
Yes. And, you know, let me go back to Nixon, because he's come up several times. And I think that point about law and order really fits there, too. These two presidents say that phrase, law and order. They campaigned on it. But really, there's just a deep irony, which is that they make gestures towards this word that then they violate in their presidencies. Nixon, of course, ordering crimes from the Oval Office, and now Trump doing the same.
So at this point, do you think that a future Justice Department, say we have a Biden presidency and, of course, a new attorney general, a future Justice Department could retry Stone or, re-examine the commutation and potentially reassert the sentence?
There's a constitutional protection against what's called double jeopardy. So we'd have to be leery of that. So retrying him on the same charges, they definitely could not do that. But what we're suggesting is something else, which is that in the same way that I think that a bribe for a pardon would be invalid, not just that the bribe would be illegal, but that it would undo the pardon or make it invalid. That's true here too. This is an illegal act, the pardon, as part of a conspiracy that's of a kind that's banned under the except in cases of impeachment clause. I think that the DOJ in the next administration should make that argument, and yes, that Roger Stone should be returned to prison. Now, the Department of Justice now might adhere to this old-fashioned view that the except in cases of impeachment phrase is really just about this other thing. It's about not being able to stop or undo an impeachment. And really, no, I think that's not what it means. And this piece is brand new, but it's getting a lot of attention on Twitter. I hope people will go to theatlantic.com. You can read it for free. And look at our evidence. We've really badly misunderstood one of the most important checks that we have on the presidency. And we've got to get back.
And in fact, Republicans could be convinced on this point if you suggest that Trump's commutation of Stone creates a precedent that a future Democratic president could use.
Absolutely. And in fact, not only can you, but they are being convinced. If you look at Bill Kristol on Twitter, who I don't usually find myself agreeing with, and I guess as many people on this show don't agree with, many listeners, he seems to like our piece. He's promoting it. So,
wow.
You know, sometimes you have to find allies in unlikely places.
And I mean, it's, again, when it comes to these issues of impeachment, it really ought to be the Constitution, right? It really ought not to be a partisan issue. And unfortunately, to, you know, the Republicans and to some extent Democrats have turned impeachment into such a partisan issue, have tried to turn the Constitution into one that's, you know, this tool to be manipulated depending upon how it politically benefits you, that it really has skewed politics so much. The Constitution is the Constitution. And if you believe that the Constitution is an important document, then it should be respected, at least those parts of it that seem to, you know, make sense for a democratic
right.
republic.
Right, exactly. I mean, it really is about whether or not we're going to be governed by law, have respect for the law, not this fake law and order, but I mean the law. And, Nixon with his crimes and Trump with his crimes have undermined that. Now, one thing that I do appreciate, and I will give the Lincoln Project and Bill Kristol and Kellyanne Conway's husband, what's his name? I'm blanking on it right
George
now.
Conway.
George Conway. My 13-year-old just chimed in there. she follows his daughter, who's 15, on Instagram and TikTok. Those people are standing up and doing exactly what you and I are talking about. They're saying, you know what, this is not a partisan issue. This man is a criminal and we have to stop him. And good for them. I think history will remember that move really well.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Corey, for joining us today. We'll post a link directly from our website to your piece in The Atlantic. Good luck to you.
Thanks so much, Sonali. Wonderful to talk to you. Best wishes.
Same here. My guest has been Corey Brettschneider, professor of political science at Brown University, author of several books, including When the State Speaks, What Should It Say? How Democracies Can Protect Expression and Promote Equality, as well as The Oath in the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents. His latest article in The Atlantic is called The Traditional Interpretation of the Pardon Power is Wrong. We've been discussing that as a framework around Trump's commutation of Roger Stone's sentence. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.